Well, hello everybody, and welcome to another edition of Faster Masters Rowing Radio, where having a rowing coach only makes you better. Following a program gives you a true pathway to becoming a confident sculler who's respected by your peers. You can become the athlete you want to row with. I'm Rebecca Caro, and as ever, I'm joined by Marlene Royal. Hey, Marlene.
Hello, Rebecca, and hello to our Faster Masters Rowing Radio audience.
Absolutely. So we have, as usual, live audience, and we know there are people who follow us after online. So if you're watching live, dive in, and you can put in the comments below where you are, and you can ask questions there if you want to. Quick reminder that if you would be so kind as to share this stream right now from your social media account, that's great because it helps us to get more listeners and to make more listeners aware of what we're up to. Now, what have you been up to this past week, Marlene? What's been going on?
Well, it's been a very busy week. You know, besides our regular work with masters and answering support questions and, you know, keeping everybody going on their programs, my local program, which is, as we know, it's a new young program. We have 15 new master's scholars coming in. Some of them are experienced, some of them are not. But so I'm in the process of scheduling initial lessons to get to know the new people coming into our group, and been doing basically, you know, the organizational stuff to set up our group sessions and how we're going to do it. So it's, you know, quite exciting to have a lot of interest in adult rowing. So it's great.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool. Delighted with that. And you've got some exciting news about the Canadian Olympic team.
Yes. And we have two girls from our local town, and they made the Canadian Olympic team. One girl is in the Canadian women's eight, and the other girl, Gabby, is in the women's double. So again, for Quebec, this is quite successful for Quebec rowing, and particularly for our town. So we're very excited.
Brilliant news. Now, I've had an article published. Row2K has put up my article, which they've given the title, The Masters Regatta Lineup Puzzle, Tactics for Selecting Masters Lineups for Regattas. And this is based on my unique personal experience of devising the comedy spreadsheet in which you run through every event and every member who wants to go to the regatta several times before you get to the final lineups. But I do explain the method I've used. Now, it's quite a long URL, but if you just go to Row2K Features, it published a couple of days ago, and I should love to hear any comments or remarks that you have about it. You can actually put comments below the article so long as you log in to Row2K.
Yeah, definitely. They did a really beautiful presentation of this article, and also in the features is a feature about Isa Chow, who is the women's single who is representing Trinidad and Tobago in Tokyo. And Aisha, I worked with Aisha back in 2015 and 2016, and you know, had the honor of doing her training program for her for the Olympic qualification up through the Rio Olympics, and that was her first international experience. And Aisha is a master's rower. She is in her late 30s. I believe she's maybe 30, 39. I'm not exactly sure if she's 38, 39, 40, but she is in her late 30s. Maybe she is 40 by now. But there's a very interesting interview with her. And after the Rio Olympics, she was able to move into, you know, training on a much, much higher level. So she was able to work with different coaches in person and has really been able to up her game. So it's quite exciting that, you know, when we went into it, it was, you know, just a new experience. Can I do this? Will they support me? Can I qualify? And she's really moved ahead. So it's really interesting and fun to track her progress. So I'll definitely be rooting for her.
Well, that's brilliant news. And it also segues nicely onto my request. You all know that I also host the Rowing Chat podcast, and I'm planning a pre-Olympic series of mini episodes, one per country, to run through the crews that they've got qualified for the Olympic regatta. So my challenge is that I need an English speaker in many countries where English isn't their native tongue. So I wonder if you listeners can help me out. These are some of the countries that I know have qualified crews for the Olympics, but I haven't yet found someone. My ideal, if I'm being strictly honest, is someone not on the team at the moment. I really don't want to distract them from their Olympic preparation. I'd really like to talk to maybe a former athlete or someone who's just maybe super fan. And these are the countries where I need help. Spain, Poland, Lithuania, Hungary, the Netherlands, Ukraine, Croatia, France, China, Switzerland, Romania, and Belarus. Now, there are obviously also sort of singletons like Korea and Trinidad and Tobago, as Marlene mentioned. It's a little bit hard perhaps to make an episode with just one athlete, but I wouldn't say no. So if I haven't mentioned the country you're interested in or you know about, please just message me through the podcast and I would love to hear from you. So I'm planning these interviews from the 20th of June through to the 30th of June approximately. So hopefully we can kick off some really cool interviews with before the end.
Yeah, definitely. It's exciting. It's exciting that it's really going to happen. You know, it's like, ooh, I think everybody's, you know, the World Cup races, World Cup 3 races were just incredible. And if people don't know, you can watch all the World Cup races. If you go to worldrowing.org and click into the events, you can see race by race, the videos and the commentaries of all the races. So like, if you just want to enjoy some really hot rowing, you know, world's men's best time was set in the last World Cup. So in the single, so, you know, there's some really great racing. So, you know, that's nice for inspiration, you know.
It is. And I think the lightweight women's double also set a world's best time in their semifinal.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty amazing. Some great racing and great. It was in Italy. So, you know, also Sabaudia. So also some just, you know, nice views.
Amazing scenery. Now, a quick reminder that if you enjoy this podcast, we would really like you to support us. We believe we provide a professional service. And so we've set up a subscription option on our website, fastermastersrowing.com/podcast, where you can donate from $1 per month. And we are very grateful for everybody who has already donated to support the production of the podcast. Now, a few of our online listeners, we welcome you all. It's really nice to see you all here. Pamela's in an airport. I happen to know that she's flying up to a camp I'm running this weekend, so I shall see you very shortly.
Mustang Chef. Yeah, go Mustang.
Now, we've got a big topic this week that came in as a result of a discussion about carrying boats. Now, this we hadn't previously thought of as, you know, a big issue. We've talked in the past about safety and things like that, but this is a really interesting situation where we have heard from a club organizer who says, I'm getting strong pushback at the moment from a couple of masters women who are new to rowing that the boats are simply too heavy to be lifted by the crew alone. And it's very hard for postmenopausal women to build strength. Now, the question really is, are we being unreasonable or should we really expect people to be able to carry their own boats? Because if they can't carry a boat on their own, by definition, they can only go rowing when there are more people available to help them carry their boat than in the crew. So we thought this was quite an interesting question because, as is often the case, it's probably not unique.
No, it's come up. It's definitely come up at some other places that I have rowed where there are mostly masters rowers.
It's a situation that I can definitely relate to. I used to coach children who were aged between 10 and 14, and you know, they physiologically are not very strong for exactly the reasons you'd expect their kids. And so, you know, we had to have a consideration, firstly, what is safe and what should we expect people to be able to do? Now, everyone knows that, you know, you share the weight of the boat amongst all the available athletes, and that the heaviest boat to carry is a single. It's also the most challenging because you've got to balance it on your own and it's very long. And obviously the lightest equivalent boat is probably either a Coxsess 4 or an 8, or maybe a Coxsess Quad, I should think. So how heavy is a boat, Marlene? How heavy is one person's share of a boat?
Well, in general, when we look at sort of functional requirements, you should be able to manage 30 pounds. And ideally, you should be able to press 30 pounds up over your head. I think that that is a very reasonable functional strength goal for any master's athlete, men or women, to be able to handle a boat. Now, in this case, if there are women who, I mean, you may not necessarily always have to put a boat up over your head, but if you've got a boat that you've got a rack, you may be required to do that, right? If you have a boat that's at shoulder high or waist high, you may not have to do that. And I think, first of all, menopausal women can absolutely gain strength, first of all. So my recommendation, you know, the club has to make a decision about this, that if you are not, unless there's some perhaps unreasonable situation where it is not possible for you to develop some strength, or there is some reason you have to adapt things, you know, I think 30 pounds is a very reasonable amount of weight to carry. And remember that people can carry a boat at waist high. You don't have to. I think you should be able to press 30 pounds up over your head to be 100% functional for your share of the boat. But you can carry it on the shoulder. You can carry it at waist high. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to look at, first of all, what are the requirements that they have to do to get their boat to the dock? How far do they have to go?
Yeah, yeah,
right? Do they have to go down a screaming hill to get to the water? Do they have to walk up a steep hill? You know, these, how far is the dock from the boathouse? So, you know, there are these types of factors. If it's a long walk, can you set up slings and set the boat down and take a break and then carry it the rest way down? You know, so, you know, you, these are things, but I think the assumption that postmenopausal women cannot gain strength is ridiculous. I think that if women want to participate in rowing, they should be encouraged, even if it's a recreational program, they should be encouraged for their well-being and lifestyle to get on a strengthening program somehow at home to be able to have that type of functional strength, because you have to carry your groceries, right? Yeah. What if you have to walk up the, I mean, these are things that are really, really important from a activities of daily living point of view. And 30 pounds is, you know, it's not that much, but, you know, it's maybe more, it's definitely more than a bag of groceries. But for example, you know, if you're looking at just your basic functional independence, you know, not being able to carry a share of a boat is, you know, I think it's kind of borderline. So, you know, I think maybe engage people in some kind of program to help prepare them. They're going to be better rowers for you if they're a little bit stronger. Like if they're not strong enough to carry the boat, what are they going to do if you get out there and you're in rough water and high wind and they don't have the strength to row against the tide or row against the wind or the waves? You know, they're going to get blown into the shores or things like that. So, you know, that might relate to other, you know, other issues.
Absolutely right. So let's be clear, 13 kilos is approximately equal, I think, to 30 pounds. And I'd hazard a guess that if you've ever picked up a box with 12 bottles of wine in it, it's probably a similar weight. So carrying your shopping, I think, is a fair reflection. There are a few other things that I think people could look at. One is, how do you distribute the personnel around the boat?
Yep.
Reflecting their relative heights and the length of their arms. So can you set people who are similar height opposite each other? I also think the boat carrying becomes easier if you, particularly on an 8 or a 4, if you bunch up close together. So have 4 people close together at each end and a long gap in the middle. I don't know why, but my perception is that that's often makes it feel easier. And also, you know, how fast can you walk? I certainly remember a regatta where we had a really long hill to go up just to get back up to the boat racks and the boat trailer. And I just said, like, let's walk fast.
March, right?
I mean, don't do things that are stupid and unsafe, but do look closely at how you can buddy people up and help them gain strength. And it has been proven that at every age, and I'm talking here up to geriatric, because I know this from the experience of my father-in-law, at every age, human beings gain strength at the same rate. Surely you will start from a lower base if you're weaker and perhaps older, but you will gain at the same rate as someone who's young and fit. So my suspicion is these ladies just need a little bit of practice, some encouragement, and maybe they should be told to take a concrete pill.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is too that, you know, if the crew can't row because they need more help to carry the boat than rowers in the boat, they're greatly limiting the amount of opportunities they have for rowing. And then the other side of it is the women who aren't strong enough to carry the boat, you know, maybe it would be really empowering for them to get strong enough that they could carry the boat. You know, I mean, who doesn't like to be independent, right?
Mm. I'd also say, take a look at their posture and your stance. You know, are you standing upright? You know, are your arms straight? Because actually you don't need to brace your arms to carry the boat at waist height. You just need to have a hook on your hand and to have a good, you know, good squared shoulders. You don't want to be hunched over or leaning forwards, you know, or backwards. You can carry the boat with both hands and walk sideways, or you can carry the boat with one hand. But again, you know, that is very dependent on your own strength. So if everybody carries the boat with two hands, it distributes the weight much more evenly.
Yeah, absolutely. And making sure that they're using their legs and supporting through their hips and, like you said, with their posture and not curling over with their back. So all this pressure is actually going into their lower back. That's not going to be very strong versus focusing the power in the legs and hips. So I think it's worth for them doing a little strength clinic, maybe teaching people how to do some overhead, just single overhead presses, even just with things at home.
Yeah. Bag of sugar is 2.2 pounds, you know? Right. So one in each hand. It's not hard to do, and just regularity would definitely help.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think that would be a very good way for them to really express that this is important to be able to do and will help you while you're building strength. However, you have to just not say categorically that I can't do this.
Yeah. I think the attitude of I can't is probably more irritating than the actual physical recognition that, why are you rowing? What do you want to achieve through it? Mm-hmm. And do you recognize that acquiring strength is going to be part of the process, whether you're doing it in the boat or between the boathouse and the boat? And I have a tendency when I'm coaching to kind of jolly people along rather than criticize or, you know, and kind of help people to see that it's possible that a change could be affected, but that maybe you need to plan a transition.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's a progress. And I think an important thing, we've talked about rowing culture before. And sometimes when people come to the sport and they're new and they're coming from the community, they're not coming from a scholastic or university background, they don't always know the details of the etiquette and the culture of the sport. And handling your equipment and handling your boat and handling your boat with pride and care and love is and delicacy is yeah. is part of the rowing culture. And so, you know, when you can't handle your equipment, that's kind of a, you know, it's a gap in the rowing culture, because we do make a huge emphasis on how we teach people how to carry boats and handle the equipment, because it is very expensive and important. So that's also something that maybe could be kind of delicately worked into the conversation about handling the equipment. And it is, you know, it is part of the sport. You know, it's part of the sport to carry your boat. So yeah, if you can, as long as you can, right? So, you know.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. Apart from all of that, there are some great ways of carrying boats with, you know, maybe assistance with a trolley or something that,
absolutely,
know, if your geography allows it, it's worth looking into.
Right, right.
Now, big topic of the day, blade parallels. Now, we all know that ideally we'd like all the oars in a boat to be perfectly symmetrical with each other, whether it's a sweep boat or a sculling boat. How much of blade parallels is based on how you set the boat up and where your foot stretchers are, and how much is based on like the height of the individuals you're talking about?
Oh, it's a lot of factors. This is one you can come at. You can certainly come at this from many different angles.
Ha ha, joke intended.
Oh yes, I know. This, but anyway, things are humorous today. Anyway, but there you can. Say if you've got two athletes who are very similar, you know, your life is a little bit easy. But you might have two athletes who are quite different in their arm length and their torso length and their dimensions. You know, the first thing I would put out there, and is I would say that if you're rowing, I'll use a double for an example here. But if you're rowing in a double with the regular partner, could be a mixed double. This is going to, you know, this could, men and women could be very different sizes, or. But say you're consistently row with another person and you're different sizes. You do not have to be rigged the same way. That's the first thing I'm going to say. So you need to use all your available adjustments to get those angles when the blade goes in and when the blade releases, to get those angles straight. So sometimes people are like, well, oh, we have to be the same span, or we have to have the same blade length or something. You do not. You can have different, you may have to have different configurations so that the blades are moving in similar patterns, and people with different dimensions may have to have wider pins, more narrow pins, different length, you know, lengths, in addition to foot stretcher adjustments and things like that. So, you know, they're, first, start simple, I would say.
And let's be clear. Our ideal is that your blades are parallel from the catch to the finish and from the finish to the catch. In my view, the easiest place to fix up to is the finish rather than the catch. And in a sweep boat, we put a mark on the deck of the boat where the back wheel of your seat goes, and we measure back from the pin either 58 or 60 centimeters. If you're really tall men, you know, you might be 62, 65 centimeters. For women of mixed height, so I'd like to be clear, in my crew, we go from probably about 162 centimeters up to 178 centimeters is probably our tallest woman. So, you know, 5'5" to 5'10", 11". And we have chosen 58 centimeters. We have previously tried 60, but a little variance. And what we do then is sit it with your legs straight and take your finger and put it down behind you without looking, feel for that back wheel. and press your finger into the slide, then roll forwards and look around and see whether your finger is square off with the little mark. And we find that that gives enough space at the finish for the sweep. So in sweep, ideally, your outside hand needs to be brushing your ribs just below your bra strap. You don't want your outside hand outside of your body, and you don't want it closer to your sternum. So it's sort of just on the edge of your outer ribs. Now, if you can't make that work, do have a look at measuring the span and the inboard of the blades. Mm-hmm. But start with however the boat is rigged.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know I've done something similar to that, not so much in centimeters, but marked off, measured the degrees from, so that people are setting at maybe 30 or 35 degrees at the release. And when you do it for the seat in front of you, that becomes the catch angle for the person as well, so that you've got 90 or 95 degrees there. So this, the same idea, but giving people a mark, because you want to start from the release so that everybody's releasing at the same time. And then you go to the mid drive, you know, to the crossover or the parallel, and then you move to the entry. But one of the things to look at as well that affects your parallel is slip.
Oh yes.
So if you have one athlete who is very well placed and the blade has really good pressure and the blade, you know, is not getting a lot of slippage, and then you've got an athlete who's got a lot of rowing it in and washing it out, and the blade is actually slipping a lot through the water, that's going to wreak havoc with your angles as well. So you might be rigged beautifully, but how that person is applying their blade work and the pressure to the blade on the drive. We talked about the drive last week, and by the way, got a lot of really good comments about talking about that 3-point pressure of the leg drive, which we talked about last week. So if somebody doesn't have a good leg drive and somebody doesn't have a good blade placement and they're not getting the blade set and they're rowing it in, you know, this is going to change all your angles, no matter how good your rigging is. So there's a couple different layers of getting the blades parallel for sure.
Yeah. So what we're saying is that first, look at the equipment and the setup in the boat. Secondly, if you are regularly using the same equipment and you can do individual rigging, definitely do it.
Absolutely.
You know, and then thirdly, look to the technique that you're rowing as possible reasons why the blades go in and out of parallel. So as a coach, if I'm looking at a crew where, as Marlene describes, there's a lot of slip at the catch, one of the things I will get them to do is to see if they can row with the blades parallel, maybe at half slide. Mm-hmm. Maybe have them do it at square blades. And one of the things about people who have a lot of slip and haven't got very high skill in their blade work, you can improve their blade work massively by increasing the load that they're rowing under. And one easy way to do that is to have half the crew sit easy and half the crew rowing, so that their blades go in the water, they are picking up much greater weight than they would if they were rowing for the whole crew. And it then helps them to feel the engagement between the blade and the water, so that they can then, they're more likely to release accurately, I think. Mm-hmm. But also catch and feel the engagement, unless they're shooting the slide really heavily. But again, shooting the slide, one really good way of improving that is actually to increase the load and to row slowly and deliberately.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you have to look at it from two different points of view, and it can take a lot of tinkering and fussing to get it that way. And if you're rowing together with a crew, regular crew or regular doubles partner or something like that, you also have to keep in mind that as you get better at certain things, you may need to make little adjustments, because as you get stronger, you may be able to do certain things better. As you get better blade work, you may be better at certain things. So, you know, you're rigging, you don't have to, I'm not advocating go wild with changing rigging, but there are times when you have to change your rigging. You can go foot stretcher a little bit more to the stern. You can get a little bit more angle. Those things can also be dependent on improving your physical capabilities and your technical capabilities. So, you know, it's a fluid system. So, you know, but but definitely strive to do this, you know, and you can check your speed coach or whatever speed app you're using and see differences. Like at rowing in 18, are you going faster? You know, are things changing?
You've reminded me of a good thing when you talked about those sorts of adjustments, is that I find as I warm up through an outing that actually I have more space at the finish. And so I have learned that when I get into a new boat, particularly a quad or something, when I'm in a boat where someone different has sat there, I fix up to have relatively little gap between my hands, or it feels like there's very little gap, and we're just sitting at the dock and getting ready. And then as we row and warm up, I actually will often find that I'm now got the right gap between my hands. And although you use accurate measurements and angles, I often say to people, you need a gap between your hands of between 1 and 1.5 fists. So if my hands are like this, what's the gap between them? And that definitely helps me, you know, I've learned to accommodate myself, I suppose, or my physiology.
Yeah. Well, you understand what happens as you get, you know, you get a little bit warmed up and a little bit more flexible. And
certainly there is a case for knowing what your tendencies are. And, you know, you're bound to stop at some point and have a drink and take your shirt off. So you can always make a quick adjustment if you haven't got
right. Absolutely. Right. Definitely. Yeah.
Now, let's talk a little bit about blade parallels, where you have athletes who are of remarkably different strengths. And I'm going to specifically say a mixed crew. So I used to row with a guy who was much younger and much stronger than me. And I found that he can put the blade in at the catch and power it through to the finish just a lot faster than I possibly could. And do you have any specific advice for that situation? Should I be adapting my stroke in order to be in time with him?
Well, to some degree, I think you both have to adapt. I mean, if you're rowing in a double, it's not two single sculls, it's two people rowing a double. So I think you have to look at the capabilities of both athletes and try to blend. I mean, the idea is to try to blend. I mean, basically, if you're at your maximum to keep up, what more can you do? Right. So, I mean, you know, then you have to look at the other partner and trying to adapt. You know, sometimes it's just a question of how hard someone pushes off the foot stretcher. You know, maybe one person kind of hits, bounces off the foot stretcher, and another person presses off the foot stretcher. So you can look at what's that initial loading in the sense of timing. Can that be, is the person who's much faster, could they soften that a little bit? Not be less strong, but just make an attempt to match that application of power. Because if you're at your max, what else can you do? There has to be some adaptation. Or one person has to shorten slightly and try to match the other person, but I don't think it's 100% up to just you to do it. So
certainly, if you're going to make a length adjustment, my view is that you should try and keep your catch parallels the same and compromise a little bit at the finish in the sculling. So if you are the longer rower, or if you have enough skill to hold the boat, the oars under the water longer, cutting your finish short has less effect on the average speed of the boat than cutting the catch short.
And I've definitely also seen, yes, absolutely.
In sweep boats, I've also seen very tall people not roll all the way out to the catch. But it's because they're very tall, their blade parallels are still in line with everybody else. So although I've just said, don't compromise the catch, actually, if you have particularly long arms or legs, you know, and you can get to that angle without being at full slide, it's not a real problem, because the benefit of having all your blades parallel is much greater than the additional boat speed you'd get if you were right out at full slide and everyone else wasn't, because your blades would be out of parallel. So if you want to figure out how these things work, take a pen or pencil and twist the angle. So imagine that, you know, this is the side of the boat, and look at, say, this is a catch angle where the tip of the blade is here. And if I reach a little bit further, the first pressure that I'm putting is, the pressure is always 90 degrees square off to the edge of the blade. It's going to be pushing the boat sideways until the oar comes around the arc. And then obviously square off is 90 degrees in the direction of travel. So you can figure that out for yourself, and just draw some diagrams on a bit of paper and lay out a whole load of pens and just have a look at what happens if you change the angles.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you can also play with is, where's the fulcrum? So like if you have a shorter inboard and a longer outboard, what happens to the angles? And if you have a longer inboard and a shorter outboard, what happens to the angles? And you can also play with adjusting the pin. So if you move, just draw a diagram of a boat, just a vertical line with some horizontal lines to show the square off rigger position, and then change the pivot point, you'll be able to see quite easily what angle changes you can make based on making a span tighter, so a narrower span.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And, you know, if you have one like really long, tall person in the crew, he or she has to still blend. And that may mean in this case that they are not using 100% of their available length, because other people won't be able to match them. So it's important. And we see this when we look at elite rowing. You see many of these incredibly huge men. Mm-hmm. And they look like they're not at full compression, you know, because they're incredibly huge, right? So many of them do not have parallel shins, for example, because but they still have incredibly long strokes because they are very big people. That's just one of the things, like if you're this tall person or the short person, right? There's the opposite. You know, you have to do your best to blend. One of the beauties of being in the single, you can row to your physiology, you can row to your dimensions. Yeah. So what you do in the single might be different than what you do in your sweep boat or your quad with your teammates, where you have to blend with other people. So, you know, rowing different boats, you might row slightly different with different types of rigging and setups. And that's absolutely, that's perfectly fine to do that, mm-hmm. for sure.
It's also a sign of a skilled athlete that, you know, mm-hmm. you can make those adaptations, you're coachable, and you can blend. Blending is an undervalued skill.
Oh, exactly. Yes, definitely.
It's hard to judge, but if you can do it, I have won seat races because I'm better able to get into a completely new crew and blend. So definitely look to your personal skill at adjusting to just the basics: catch timing, finish timing. When did their seat start to roll forwards? Are you perfectly in time with that? Can you see their outside elbow or mm-hmm. both their elbows and sculling? Can you be perfectly in time with that? And that's how you build your skill at blending. Now, one of our live watchers has said, I have my first sprint next week for 1,000 meters. What's the 1 week out taper for us more mature people getting ready for a sprint? Well, I can tell you it's not cutting back on the beer, although I'm sure that will help your lifestyle.
I hope it's good beer.
Good beer is worth having. I haven't got a taper that is, you know, typical. A lot of people will rest one day before the actual race. The key is to find a balance that makes you wake up on race day feeling rested, energetic, and ready to go out and do your best. There is a taper which is given in our paid programs. So if you want one, it's very easy to get it. Just buy 1 month and then you can discontinue if you want to. But the point about the taper is that it it gives you enough of a rest that you have recovered the energy deficit that you might be feeling on a regular kind of week by week training basis. And it's kind of more rest than you would normally get if you maybe you have 1 or 2 day rest days in the week or 3 or whatever it is. But, you know how tired you feel in the morning and then, you know, relative one morning to the next, how tired you feel. And if you don't know this, it's really interesting, actually, just to keep a little diary, mm-hmm. give yourself a point out of 10. How good was my sleep last night? How is my muscle soreness and how is my mental energy? And just give yourself points every morning. And that'll just give you some really simple subjective clues to yourself. How do I feel?
Right.
And then compare that with your week leading up to a sprint race. And that'll help you gauge how well rested you are, whether your taper's working.
Well, and I would definitely emphasize rest. I think one of the things that people do not take seriously enough before a trial or a race is rest. Like, for example, you don't go to the head of the Charles and then walk around the river for 2 hours, the morning or the day of registration, and you're going to race the next morning, right? The same thing, that the day of going into your race, train on your same frequency during the week, just all you want to do is treat it as a sharpening. You're not going to get in better shape the week before a race. The work is done. So focus on nice, good technical stuff, getting rest, staying on a regular rhythm, eating well, being, well recovered, and definitely make sure that you rest, because if you're not rested mentally, you cannot tolerate pain. So, pain tolerance is highly dependent on how rested you are. If you're not rested and you're tired and you're stressed, it's really difficult to push through and stay focused when things start to hurt. And that's one thing that I think a lot of people underestimate, that, and that's something that's very important to push through. You're not going to get in shape the week before a race. If you're not in shape, you're not going to be there. But you can affect your focus to a great deal based on how rested you are.
Yeah, you definitely can. Now, if you've enjoyed this week's podcast, please consider making a regular donation to us. That's fastermastersrowing.com/podcast. And thank you to everybody who's been with us live listening to Faster Masters Rowing Radio, the show dedicated to masters athletes who want fun, fitness, and confidence in their rowing. You can become a student of the sport by buying a Faster Masters program subscription today at fastermastersrowing.com. Till next week, bye-bye.
Yep. Have a good race, Mustang.